much. So yeah, I'm interested in Grumov-Witten theory. I guess this is a string theory seminar. We can also call this topological string theory. For a certain class of threefolds. So my target is going to be a certain class of threefolds. And these are going to be non-compact threefolds, which are simply given by vector bundles over curves. In fact, split vector bundles. So my threefold, I'll call it N, just be the total space of a sum of two line bundles over a curve X. So X is a curve of genus G. This is very satisfying chalk and chalkboard. This stuff, something is nice about this. X is a curve of genus G, and we'll say Li, a line bundle of degree Ki. So, yeah, it's these threefolds that I'm interested in computing the topological string partition function. So we want, and in fact, these threefolds, they have a, they're non-compact, but they do have a torus action, so there's actually more structure there. So we want the equivariant, so maybe I should say, of course, there is a torus that acts on this threefold. Acts on N. And so we want to compute the equivariant Grumov-Witten partition function. Of N. So in fact, what we're going to do is we're going to build some technology to compute these partition functions based on the geometry here. So this, we call this the local theory of curves. Sometimes for non-compact threefolds that are given by like a neighborhood of a curve or a surface, you'll hear people talk about the local Grumov-Witten invariance of a curve or the local Grumov-Witten invariance of a surface. So we usually mean the invariance of a threefold. Threefolds play a special role in Grumov-Witten theory, which is non-compact, which is a neighborhood of a curve. So this kind of models a neighborhood of a curve in a threefold. Now these topological partition functions, so in fact there was a recent preprint. So so what am I going to do? Let me say, I'm going to show you how to compute these. So we'll develop a TQFT machinery to compute these. Compute this. Based on degenerating the curve, or pulling apart the curve into if you want, Riemann surfaces with boundary. And then we'll get to, this will actually lead us to very nice formulas, particularly in the Calabi-Yau case. So this is a threefold. If the tensor product of the two line bundles is the canonical bundle X, then this is a threefold that has the trivial canonical bundle, and we'll consider that to be the Calabi-Yau case. And we'll find that in the Calabi-Yau case we get very nice closed formulas. So we get nice closed formulas in the, in fact, because of the torus action, we can actually consider the equivariant Calabi-Yau case. So that will only be a subtorus here, which acts on the canonical bundle trivially, in the equivariantly Calabi-Yau case. And I bring this up because there was a recent preprint of Aganagich, Aguri, Salina, and Vafa, which in fact used this calculation and showed that this these topological string partition functions are related to 2D Yang-Mills, to a Q-deformed 2D Yang-Mills theory. Mills partition functions. So these calculations in mathematics have actually had some recent impact in physics. So these geometries were not known how to compute this, and these nice formulas suggested a relationship with 2D Yang-Mills theory. So in fact, this preprint is recent even by physics standards. It came out on the archive this morning. All right, well, so let me, I better tell you what it is that we're actually doing, and what are these Gromov-Witten partition functions. So from the point of view of mathematics, Gromov-Witten theory is integrals on the moduli space of stable maps. So let's see. So since Tx, our torus acts on my space N, it induces a map, induces an action on the moduli space of maps. So let me. So this is a moduli space that parameterizes stable maps. So moduli space of stable maps. That's a map from a curve to my threefold of degree. Times x. So x is, of course, sits inside of n as the zero section. This is the degree. Genus h which I will define to be 1 minus the holomorphic Euler characteristic of the structure sheaf of the curve. I'm going to define it that way because I want to allow possibly disconnected curve c. So c, that's what this dot is supposed to mean, to differentiate from usual notation. So this is, C is a possibly disconnected so in particular this genus could be negative under this definition, but I don't want, I want F as non-constant on connected components. So I'm allowing the domain to have different components, but I don't want any component to get contracted, any connected component to get contracted. So this is just a slight variance on the usual space of stable maps. And this moduli space has has a virtual fundamental class that we can do integrals over. I'm sorry? Little h. H is the genus. I'm saving g just because g was the genus of my curve over here. And h is this genus in the sense of disconnected guys. So Gromov-Witten invariants are integrals over these moduli spaces. So let me write sort of the integral that I'd like to define, the partition function. So remember, my total space is n. I'm going to fix this degree. And let me put equals here in quotes because there's going to be a problem that we have to address. So this partition function should be a generating function. So I'll have a formal variable u. And then we want to integrate, well, so integrate, I really mean equivariant push forward. So I'm doing everything equivariantly. So this is equivariant push forward, I should say. Push forward in equivariant cohomology. So integral. Well, so the problem here is that because my threefold is non-compact, this moduli space might not be compact. This push forward, it might not be proper. So this push forward may not be defined if this moduli space is non-compact. Okay, sometimes it is compact. For example, if these degrees of these bundles are both negative, then any map has to lie in the zero section. So in fact, the moduli space is compact. So there are some settings here where this is well defined. Even when it's not well defined, what I'd like to do is I'd like to define this integral using the Atiabat, well, the virtual version of the Atiabat localization formula. So might not be defined. Because of non-compactness. So use localization to define. So equals so if this were defined, I could use the Atiabat localization to write it as an integral over the fixed point loci under the T action. Well, the fixed point loci here are nothing more than maps to the zero section. So the fixed point loci are maps, same thing, but to X rather than all of N. And it has its own virtual class. And for an integrand, I have to put in the equivariant, 1 over the equivariant Euler class of the normal bundle. Well, the virtual normal bundle, since it's a virtual class. So N being the virtual normal bundle. All right, so those are the integrals that we are studying. And where does this live? This is an equivariant class, and in localization you have to invert the equivariant parameters. So this is, first of all, it's a Laurent series in U. The genus can be negative, but for a given D, it can't be too negative. Finite negative. So it's a Laurent series in U whose coefficients, well, this is a Q class, so it could be rational numbers and then rational functions in the equivariant parameters. So let's let the equivariant cohomology of the torus be generated by S1 and S2. So these partition functions are Laurent series in U whose coefficients are rational functions in S1 and S2. Okay. So in fact, these guys only depend upon Gromov-Witten theory is a topological theory. It doesn't depend upon It only really depends upon discrete data. And since we're doing equivariant theory, it does actually depend upon only the equivariant deformation class of N. So this guy depends only on, well, the degree, the genus of the target, and what we call the levels, the degrees of the bundles, K1, K2. And so I'd like to just sort of introduce a different notation that is a little more convenient. Gives me a chance to renormalize and to build these things into the notation. So we'll define this to be so in the Clavial case, there's this normalization isn't there. It turns out that's a convenient normalization in the non-Clavial case. And even if all you were interested in was the Clavial case, as seems to be relevant for the physics, in order to compute this Clavial case, it will be necessary to introduce all these other non-Clavial geometries. So the structure of the TQFT that you get when this more general geometry is necessary in order to compute these guys. Right, so, okay, so these are the basic objects of study. So the equivariant, there's a few remarks here. So these are the basic objects of study. So the case where K1 plus K2 is equal to 2G minus 2, and where S1 plus S2 equals 0 is what we call the equivariant Clavial. So, once again, if the sum of these guys is 2G minus 2, then the canonical bundle of N is numerically trivial. And now if I want it to be equivariantly trivial, I want the group to act trivially on that canonical bundle. Well, so I can't do that with the whole group, but I can do that with the anti-diagonal. So the anti-diagonal C star that sits inside of here will act on that trivially. So restricting to the anti-diagonal corresponds to setting in the equivariant parameters S1 equal to minus S2. So this is the equivariant Clavial case. And that's, in some sense, the most interesting case. All right. So what I want to show you now is that we can build a gluing theory for these invariants that does a number of interesting things. First of all, it will actually compute all these guys for us. But second, it will exhibit these things as giving us a deformation, depending upon this U, the S1 and the S2, of the classical character algebra of the symmetric group of D letters. So there's sort of built into here some interesting representation theory and group theory. So to see that, we need to build a gluing theory. You know, I forgot to mention at the very beginning that this is all joint work with Rahul Pandarapande. Okay, so let's do a gluing theory. So, all right, so Jin Lee's theory of relative stable mass provides a framework for a gluing theory. Okay, so let me set up the relative versions of these guys. So relative versions. If I now have a genus, my genus G curve X, and I take R points, and I mark these points by partitions of D. So lambda 1, lambda R, lambda 1, is a partition so lambda is a partition of D, I can look at maps to this curve. So my integrals here involve maps to x. I can now impose, there, Jun Li's theory allows me to impose boundary conditions, if you want, at these points. So the moduli space of relative stable maps, h, x, and now I'll put in this data, lambda 1, lambda r, this parameterizes maps with a prescribed ramification over these points. So maybe I'll give these points names, x1 through xr, with prescribed lambda I over xi. So if this is my curve x, and here's a point xi, my map which might be ramified elsewhere should be have prescribed ramifications. So for example, this is a degree 4 map, this is the ramification 2 plus 2 as a partition of 4. And this space has a compactification in a virtual class and can be used actually to understand what happens to these integrals as you degenerate a curve to a nodal curve. So these lead to a gluing theory. So I basically write down the same integrals that I wrote before, but with these relative conditions. So let's define k1, k2. So now I'm going to put the relative conditions as indices, so lambda 1 through lambda r. Remember, those are partitions. So there's going to be some normalization analogous to this normalization here. Times u to the 2 times, and now the integral. And this is, once again, 1 over the Euler class. Yeah, well, let's see. Actually, I could write it as 1 over the Euler class of a virtual normal bundle. Let me just use this chance to tell you explicitly what that virtual normal bundle is. So as an element in K-theory, we can write it like this. So what is this? This is my moduli space has a universal curve and a universal map. So this is my moduli space. The universal curve, if I look at it over a point here, the fiber is the domain of the corresponding point, and the restriction of this map is the map. And I can pull back, so I can take the line bundles, which live on X, I can pull them back, and then I can push them forward in K-theory. So this is R dot pi lower star. And the minus sign is here because this was in the denominator. Now I've written it like it's in the numerator. So that actually gives you sort of explicitly what are we integrating. And so this is the definition of the relative invariance. So these are, and delta is a combinatorial factor that maybe I'll just leave out here. So this gives me relative versions. And let me do one more definition, and then I'll show you how the gluing works and the structure that you get from the gluing. All right, well, so the easiest way to formulate the gluing is going to be thinking of these guys as components of matrices. So I want to give you a way of raising the sort of a metric. How do I raise these indices? So a rule for raising indices So remember, these indices are partitions, and so I'll raise an index, raising an index lambda is multiply by the factor S1, S2 to the length of the partition times zeta. So zeta, if the partition is given by 1, if my partition has M1 1s and M2 2s and M3 3s, then this combinatorial factor, which comes up in symmetric function theory quite a bit, is the product MJ factorial J to the MJ. Okay. All right, so that's a rule for raising the indices. All right. So the gluing formalism is going to be obtained by viewing these functions as really matrix entries. So let me show you how that works. So let's give my ring, my basic ground ring, is this power series, Laurent series in U, whose coefficients are rational functions in the S1 and S2. And let's let the Hilbert space of the TQFT be the free R module generated by a basis with partitions. So for each partition of D, we get a copy of the ring. So this is a free R module. All right. So then for each cobordism labeled by levels, we get an R module homomorphism. So the name of that homomorphism is going to be ZD. So to each cobordism, so a cobordism from a collection of circles to another collection of circles, so this is going to be an oriented two-manifold of some genus G and some number of incoming circles and some number of outgoing circles and labeled by levels. So I just want this cobordism to come equipped with a pair of integers k1 and k2. To each cobordism like this, I'm going to define a homomorphism from the S tensor product of this Hilbert space of the theory to the T-th tensor product of the Hilbert space of this theory, simply by viewing these guys as matrix elements. So we'll send
the basis E lambda 1 tensor E lambda S to sum over mu 1 mu T Z D G K 1 K 2 mu 1 Okay, so any module homomorphism from this vector space to this vector space is given by in tensor notation by collections of these elements of the ground field. Okay, so that's something very simple. So I want to view these relative invariants as giving me ways to pass from sort of this Hilbert space to this Hilbert space whenever I have a cobordism that's marked by integers. And the simplest, most concise way to formulate the gluing laws, right? So the gluing laws are going to be things that relate these relative invariants to other relative invariants and to ultimately to closed invariants, is to say that this mechanism here actually gives me a functor of tensor categories, where one category is R modules and the other category is the category of these cobordisms. So let me write that. So the theorem So this thing, as defined above, defines a tensor functor from the category of level labeled cobordisms to R modules. So this category is what? The category of the objects are compact one manifolds. Compact-oriented one-manifolds. The morphisms are labeled cobordisms. The tensor structure is disjoint union. And I should tell you how to compose. You compose two cobordisms just by concatenating them and adding the levels. So, in fact, let me just draw that somewhere. So concatenation. So, for example, if I take ZD. So in this functor, the circle goes to the H. So disjoint unions of circles go to the tensor products of H. That's how I'm getting that. The empty manifold, so this is a cobordism from two circles to the empty manifold, is the ground ring R. So let me put some numbers here. So this is a functor from H squared. Sorry, this is a homomorphism from H squared to H squared, and composed with something from H squared to R, and that's equal to the composition. Well, the composition here is you concatenate the two cobordisms and you add the levels. And this is H squared to R. So the content here is this encodes sort of all of these invariants with these 4 points. This has relative invariants with 2 points. Tells you how to glue them together to get relative invariants with a different genus, different level with 2 points. And the point is you can compute that this category for this functor encodes, first of all of the invariants, closed or relative or non-relative. And because it's a functor, it's determined by generators for this category. So the functor encodes all the partition functions, all the invariants. And moreover, it's determined by the generators of this, the value on the generators of this category, which are the following. It's determined basically the generators for this category up to raising and lowering indices. So it's determined by these invariants, the cap, so 0, 0, lambda. The tube, the pants, so these are the level zero, all right, let me write the rest of them, and then the so the level zero cap, maybe I should draw the picture. The level zero tube and the level zero pair of pants. And the caps in level minus one. So this and this guy. So we have 5 partition functions that if you can compute these, then you can build up, the point is you can build up any Riemann surface out of pants and caps, and you can bring down the levels with these negatives. So you can make the levels as negative as you want. Now what about the positive levels? Well, it comes from the following. Sort of well-known observation. If you look at just the level zero part of this category, that well, these are caps. Of course, I can get a tube by gluing one of these caps into this pants, and then I get a negative tube. So, and then I can use that tube to go as negative as I want. So these first 3 actually define a Frobenius algebra structure on H. So these define a Frobenius algebra structure on this Hilbert space of the theory. Well, this free R module. Okay, basically this is the unit. Well, this is the identity. I need it there just because it's one of the generators of the category. The unit, if you want, this is already built into the metric. Yeah, I really should have drawn this one like this. And the unit, the metric, and the multiplication. So that's what these 3 objects give you. So it gives you, and in fact, it turns out that this, my underlying R, right, is this sort of US1, S2 deformation of Q. If you set these equal to 0 in the appropriate way, you recover this Frobenius algebra is actually the character algebra of the symmetric group. So this whole thing is a deformation of the character algebra of the symmetric group. So we get a Frobenius algebra on H, in fact, a deformation of the character algebra of the symmetric group, SD. And then these guys, these are called, oh, and so then this defines an invertible element in that algebra. The inverse is just the thing with the plus one, because if I glue those two together, I'm going to get the identity. So once I know this guy, and if I know those, then I can get the plus one by taking the inverse in that algebra. Okay, so I really only need to know these right here. And in fact, moreover, it turns out this algebra is semi-simple. Well, that's more or less clear because it's a deformation of a semi-simple algebra. Okay, so I just need to tell you how to compute these five things, and that solves the whole theory. So maybe I will not give you the formulas for those. So these five can be computed. These two are relatively easy, so these five be computed. So let me say, here's one, two, three, four. Well, and this one is obtained from that one by symmetry. You just exchange the S1 and the S2. So one and two are easy with dimension counts. Meaning that each of these is a series, and the coefficients of these series are given by these integrals. But in that particular case, these integrals are integrals of Euler classes of bundles, and the bundles are typically too small. So by a dimension count, the rank of the bundle versus the dimension of the moduli space, most of them are zero. The ones that aren't zero are sort of easy to compute with first principles. Four is computed with virtual localization and was first done by Jun Lee and Lian Song. Virtual localization. So this is harder. This is coming from the fact that the cap, which is really P1 with one mark point, has an action, has this additional action of a torus. So I can use that to compute. But now the pants in general are hard. Pants are hard. There's no group action to compute. But they're also not completely independent. These are the structure constants for an associative algebra. So there's associativity relations. So it turns out that dimension counts, which work for certain subsets of these, but not all of them, along with associativity, along with one particular integral, which you have to just somehow do by hand, which you can. So it's where the partition is d, d, and the transposition. So 1, d minus 1, 2, all 2 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. It turns out that these guys determine everything. Okay, so the outcome is the whole theory is solved. Now, I mean, before, in fact, I should say something about this deformation because it turns out that this guy pops up in some other very interesting places. So this algebra, these structure constants take values in this ring. Well, it turns out that kind of an amazing coincidence, or maybe it's not a coincidence, is that these are also the structure constants for the quantum cohomology of the Hilbert scheme of points in the plane. So let me say this. So this is combining
my work with Akunkov Pandharapande. So the structure constants, which are computed by this theorem here, the structure constants Z, B, 0, 0, are the structure constants for the quantum cohomology of the equivariant, I should say, so I should put a T somewhere, equivariant quantum cohomology of the Hilbert scheme of D points in the plane under the change of variables Q equals minus E to the IU. So I have the same equivariant variables, S1 and S2. Here I have this genus variable U. Over here I have a quantum parameter Q, and if I make this change of variables, then these guys, the structure constants here, are the same as the structure constants for this thing on the nose, which is kind of remarkable. And maybe I will come back to that at the end for a possible explanation of that. Yes, it does. This delta, that's right. I mean, partly this delta is there so that these guys become nice functions of Q. Right? I mean, the physicists would say this is a non-perturbative substitution. In order to make this guy, and you can't compare terms Q by Q to terms of U. You have to know one side completely, in a sense, to compute a single term on Q. So even the fact that these guys, that this substitution is well-defined, is a highly non-trivial fact about the Gromov-Whitney invariance. In fact, it's equivalent to the Gopa-Kumar-Vatha integrality conjecture, if people know what that means. So in particular, Gopa-Kumar-Vatha conjecture is satisfied for all of these invariants. So that's already a highly non-trivial statement. But what I really like to show you then, now that we have this theory, is to take this theory out for a drive and really show you the formulas. Now we can... Because you can this Frobenius algebra is semi-simple, you can hope it to diagonalize it. If you diagonalize it, gives you a very efficient way of writing formulas for the partition functions, and we can do that. We can get the best formulas for the equivariantly Clabi-Yau case. So for the equivariant Clabi-Yau case. Remember, that's K1 plus K2 equals 2G minus 2, and S1 plus S2 equals 0. We get the following formula. So sum over partitions, but I'm going to actually view them as representations of the symmetric group, which is also labeled by partitions. So where Q, all right, so capital Q is E to the IU. This C row is the total content of the partition. So you draw the partition as in its Young diagram form, and you sum the content, where the content of a box at position ij is the difference, ij. And what is this Q dimension? Well, Q dimension of a representation is a deformation of the dimension of the representation. So here's the definition here. Q row over D factorial is you Q deform the hook length formula for the dimension of a representation. So this is I Q to the H
where h is the hook length. And just so that, just to make it clear that this is actually a deformation, if I write that in terms of the u, I could also write that as 2 sine hook length. So if you look at this as a Laurent series in U and you look at the lowest coefficient is the product of the hook lengths, and the product of the hook lengths is the ordinary dimension divided by d factorial. So this really is a deformation of the ordinary dimension. And it's this formula, in fact, that looks exactly like the partition function for a Q-deformed 2D Yang-Mills theory. So that was recently figured out by Gonagich and Bafa et al. And let me just show you one specialization of this that I particularly like, which is the what I call the balanced case. So if the degree of the two, if k is g minus 1, so what does that mean? That really means I'm taking, say, the square root of the canonical bundle, take two theta divisors as my line bundles, then we see that the partition function, just specializing that formula, is this guy. Well, now, why do I like that? If the Q is not there, so if this were just the ordinary, so this is a number rather than a series, right? In fact, it's the lowest. Then this is the classical formula, so really due to Hurwitz from over 100 years ago, that tells you the number of degree D covers of a genus G curve. So it just really counts. It's a question about maps of the fundamental group into the symmetric group. How many maps are there of the fundamental group of a Riemann surface of genus G into the symmetric group? Well, that counts D-fold covers, and it's given by this classical formula. So you see that the string partition function for this sort of threefold geometry is a Q deformation of that very classical formula for unramified covers of, in this case, say, the zero section. I think I'll stop there. Thank you. Yeah, so that's, if you do indecomposable, in fact, that was the original motivation behind this whole project. Indecomposable, you would have to would correspond to restricting to the diagonal rather than the anti-diagonal. So in order to I can't deform a split vector bundle to a generic one with the full torus, but if I just have the scaling, I can deform to a generic. And in terms of so the very original question of whether that local theory is globally defined, do I need to use localization to define it, or is it just defined? Are those moduli spaces compact? They do tend to be compact for generic stable rank 2 bundles. So another interesting specialization, this specialization where S1 is equal to minus S2 leads to these beautiful formulas, but the other specialization, S1 equals S2, is really more about the global geometry of Clavius. That's really closer to a global invariant. So yeah, we do also study those. You can write down complete formulas for small d. And then the theory is solved recursively, but it's sort of hard to write down closed formulas because it's hard to diagonalize the Frobenius algebra in that case. Yeah, well, it's so from the point of view of maybe I'll give the answer from the point of view of math instead of string theory. I think there's a good answer in string theory as well, why Calabi-Yau threefolds are important. But if from the point of view of Gromov-Witten theory, it has to do with the deformation theory of these moduli spaces of stable maps. So one way to say it is that the virtual dimension of these moduli spaces is independent of the genus. So notice when I integrated, I integrated one. Right? So in other dimensions, that's not such a natural thing to do. You would have to put in constraints. For surfaces, you sort of might ask your maps to pass through points or something. But in dimension three, you can always integrate one and get something regardless of the genus. So maybe what's special is that the moduli space of curves has dimension 3g minus 3, and that 3 cancels with the dimension of the target to give a genus independent deformation theory. Well, dimension. Yeah. Right, so, yeah, that's right. So in the Calabi-Yau case, the dependence on S1 and S2 is as a rational function that's homogeneous. And in the Calabi-Yau case, it's homogeneous of degree zero. So as soon as you set, like, S1 equal to S2, it just goes away completely. Yeah, so you don't see it showing up.